The next matter on this morning's oral calendar is State of Minnesota versus Juan Carlos Garcia Morales. Please identify yourselves, counsel, when you reach the podium. Counsel for appellant may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Julie Nelson. I represent the appellant Juan Garcia Morales and his direct appeal from his conviction for criminal vehicular homicide. There is no dispute. The facts of this case are beyond tragic. However, tragic facts do not mean it's all right for the district court to ignore our constitutional protections and the binding authority of appellate case law. And that is precisely what happened here when the district court upheld the search warrant in this case. There are two solid grounds for this court to reverse the district court's ruling. First, there was no probable cause for the blood draw within the four corners of the search warrant. Secondly, there were material facts that were at the very least recklessly omitted from the search warrant's affidavit. And had those facts been included, it would have undermined any sort of finding of probable cause for the search warrant. And I'll address both of these issues in turn. With regard to the finding probable cause for the search warrant, this court affords great deference to the signing judge's determination of whether a search warrant is supported by probable cause, the court's consideration is limited to the four corners of the search warrant affidavit. This court cannot consider imputed knowledge with other officers. There must be a substantial basis for concluding that probable cause existed, meaning that there's a fair probability that contraband or evidence of a crime will be found in a particular place. And the reason that this court gives great deference to the signing judge is because it is assumed that the signing judge takes careful consideration and review of the search warrant and the affidavit. But when that doesn't happen, great deference cannot and should not be afforded. And all I ask you to do is to look at the second page of the affidavit's application, section 4. It's in the addendum to appellant's brief at page 9. And it says that from their investigation, troopers and officers formed the belief that at the time of the collision, the suspect, Juan Carlos Garcia Morales, was the driver and was under the influence of alcohol. And this finding is based on, Sergeant spoke with Garcia Morales at the St. Cloud Hospital, and he was unaware of what color the light he had, and it was later learned by officers. Now, a district court judge looking at this should have seen a couple of red flags, at least. First of all, again, we're just looking at the four corners here, so what about that tells a judge or anyone that there's reason to believe that appellant had alcohol in his system? There's absolutely nothing.
You're not arguing that the magistrate needed to ignore the previous information, or are you, in the application?
No, I'm suggesting that because this part was absolutely ignored, the probable cause section would show that this was not properly reviewed. But even if you were to look at, give the judge great deference, and look at the prior section that talks about there was past drug use, that still isn't going to give you probable cause for the search warrant because, again, they're asking for alcohol. Now, I know we're not challenging that part of it in the second portion of this as far as misrepresented facts. We understand that that was an error. It's a template. That's the argument. That's not at issue here for the second part of this argument. But it is certainly for the first part where we're looking at whether or not the district court really reviewed this. And I don't think he did. I think he signed it.
Do you think that if this had been a case in which indicia of alcohol use was present, that the search warrant would have to include some facts about why the officer who's applying for the warrant believed that the driver was under the influence of alcohol?
Absolutely. Something. And I think that's really clear. One of the cases that sets that out rather nicely is State v. Fawcett, which is a Minnesota Supreme Court case from 2016, where there was a finding, there was a substantial basis to believe evidence of intoxication, where officers stated that there was an odor of alcohol coming from the defendant, officers believed the defendant had been drinking, and the defendant indeed admitted she had been drinking. So there you go with probable cause. We don't have any of that here. But I'll even give you, let's say it didn't say alcohol, let's say it said drugs. In the past is not sufficient. It simply isn't. It's far too vague.
So had it said drugs, your position is that the application would have to provide the reader with some basis, factual indicia about why the officer believed that the driver was under the influence of drugs?
Absolutely, or that drugs would be found, at least found in his system, whether it would be based on indicia of drug use, whether it would be drugs found on the appellant or the driver, whether there'd be drug paraphernalia found within the car. If you take one of those facts and add it with he's a known drug user in the past, okay. But we don't even have that. All we have is in the past. In the past.
Why isn't an officer's common sense come into play where saying, look, this person in broad daylight ran through a red light, admitted at the scene that he didn't know what color the light was. And you know, why isn't that enough to someone to say something else must be going on here?
Because it's not based on common sense. There has to be probable cause to say that.
Officers can't use their common sense in coming to that conclusion?
They can use their common sense to further investigate, which I think that they did, but that's still not enough to issue the search warrant. And in addition to which, there were other reasons why he might have run through the red light. First of all, he said the first thing he said at the scene was, I was in a fight with my girlfriend. I was distracted. How many accidents in this state happen because someone's distracted?
But the question isn't whether there might be something else at a probable cause mm-hmm. level. It's whether there's enough for probable cause that it might be there might be criminal evidence or evidence to support a crime.
Right.
Right. And if he was, I know that it's not in the right place, but we look at this objectively, right?
Right.
Not with respect to what a specific officer's belief was based on, but whether the application as a whole, I think, would contain probable cause. And if he was, there's not an explanation, it's broad daylight, he was in a daze. Now, I understand there might be another reason for being in a daze. You've just been in a car crash. But
serious car
yeah,
crash. I mean, he hit another car.
You might also be in a daze because of impairment, because of a substance. So I think if you look at those together, including like his actual physical appearance, that he's in a daze and there's not, that's the main thing, and past drug use.
Except that, and I understand what Your Honor is saying, except that he was in a daze initially, and again, he hit the other car obviously with a substantial force, okay? It would make sense he'd be in a daze. But after that, he was described as being oriented to time and place and able to answer questions, and there was nothing in
any... Is that in the application?
No, it's not.
Okay, so now you're getting into a question
right.
of whether that belongs in there. But based on the application itself, it doesn't talk about a change in...
This is correct.
Okay.
You are correct. But even if this court were to find probable cause based on this, which I just don't see how it can, but if it did, and we do, in no way would concede that there's probable cause for this... There were material facts that were omitted from the search warrant that, had they been provided, certainly would have undermined a finding of probable cause. And again, the fact that in the past, what does that mean? Well, in this case, it meant 4 months ago. What if it had been 2 years ago? What if it had been 5 years ago? In the past means, in this particular case, 4 months ago. And not only that, in the past means 4 months ago, but the person who had just been with him, and it's unclear to me from the record whether she was actually his girlfriend, current girlfriend or ex-girlfriend or what the relationship was, but that she stated she had no reason to believe that he had been using recently, and she had just been with him that morning and had seen him short time before that. And
but she said more than that, apparently. She also kind of hesitated to say it, and then she admitted, didn't she? I mean, you know,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Better than I do. And then she also said, well, she really wouldn't know because they would split up.
She did say that, but she also said she had no reason to know that he had been using recently. And when you couple that with we knew he used it 4 months ago and she had no reason to know that he was doing it recently, and it wasn't as though she hadn't seen him, maybe that would be a stronger context. But she had just seen him that morning, and she had no reason to believe. And the fact that she was hesitant to talk to police officers, well, that's just par for the course. A lot of people are hesitant to talk to police officers when they come knocking on their door. And it sounds as though in this case that the officers knew her, so who knows what that relationship was. It's certainly hesitancy on her part. But that's the information they had, and regardless, that's the information they had, that's the information that should have been supplied to the signing magistrate in this case. If they had been, again, that makes them material because they would have undermined the probable cause, most definitely. Whether or not this was done recklessly, that's reviewed by clearly erroneous standard, and I would argue that it was reckless. The district court's finding were clearly erroneous. One of the things that the district court said in the order or the opinion, the memorandum, was that Sergeant Stather testified that the information he placed in the search warrant application was as much information as Trooper Curtis disseminated. And that further, there is no evidence that Trooper Curtis acted intentionally or recklessly in not conveying the information. There's a lot to unpack there, but that is clearly erroneous because that's really not what Sergeant Stathert said. In addition to saying that he also said he couldn't recall whether he was told that in the past referred to October 31st, 2016. And it's really unclear here as to what Stathert was told and what he wasn't told. Stathert said, I put in the search warrant everything that Trooper Curtis gave me. And Trooper Curtis said, I gave him everything that I testified to here today. And everything that Trooper Curtis testified to was that he had spoken with appellant's girlfriend, and appellant's girlfriend said that in the past meant 4 months ago, and that there was no reason to believe that he was using currently. So somewhere along the way there, that information was omitted. Now, didn't include it because he hadn't been told, that's understandable. But that doesn't make it any less reckless that it wasn't included. And if he was told it and simply left it out, then it was a deliberate decision on his part. Likewise, if Captain Olson and Trooper, Captain Olson and Trooper Curtis knew all this information from Sanford, and none of that information made it in here. None of it did. Somewhere along the way, it should have been in here. And had it been, I don't know how you could find probable cause for the search warrant for appellant's blood. I'd like to just conclude briefly with one final and an important thought for this court to consider. While this court's decisions is always impactful and meaningful to the parties, they're not always impactful to other litigants. They may or may not be, depends. Here, if this court affirms this search warrant, affirms the rulings, and upholds this search warrant, it will have statewide impact. Because every time a defendant challenges probable cause for a search warrant, prosecutors across the state are going to stand up in front of the district court judge and say, but Your Honor, in State v. Garcia Morales, the Court of Appeals upheld a search warrant where the probable cause section was nearly blank. And it won't matter whether this opinion is published or unpublished, because sometimes all district court judges have to look at are unpublished decisions to see where this court is heading on things. So I guess my question for this court is, if not reversing here on this case, then what search warrant isn't going to be found valid? I will save any other comments or any questions. I will yield the rest of my time and save my other comments for rebuttal.
The meth use.
Yes.
Let's change the facts and assume for a moment it was recent and it, you know, within the last week, let's say, the application said there had been meth use. And he was in a daze and the circumstances mm-hmm. were otherwise the same. Is there probable cause there?
Yes.
Okay. So what you're arguing then is just so meth use and a history of meth use can be a factor in probable cause. So is your argument that this was stale?
Absolutely, that's part of it as well.
So it turns on the staleness of it, not the fact of past meth use. It's like how stale that meth use information is. Is that the difference maker here?
Yes. In this case, because it was stale, it's from 4 months ago, Soto says that is definitely stale and can't be used. Although I will say this, if it was in the past and it was a week ago, I think I could still make the argument that probable cause wasn't here. But then I think you can go to the next argument, which is, while it's an omitted fact, if it had been included, it wouldn't have changed the finding of probable cause, because if someone used meth within the last week or two, it's very likely to be found in their system. Officers know that. Judges know that. So I think in that case, it would have at least been saved on the second part of this. I would still be here arguing in the past is not probable cause.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court, counsel, Sam Wertheimer from the Sherman County Attorney's Office for the state of Minnesota. Well, February 22nd, 2017 was certainly a tragic day in Sherman County. A young person by the name of Daniel Bartel lost his life. I disagree with counsel. There certainly was probable cause for the search warrant, and I don't believe there's what we call in district court a Franks issue in this case whatsoever. And what counsel's basically arguing to, the standard for review here, was there a substantial basis for the court to sign the warrant? Was there a substantial basis for the district court to sign the warrant, giving great deference to that decision? Her answer is, I don't think he read the warrant, so don't apply that standard. That is the standard. Again, substantial deference to the opinion. So we're not starting at square one. It would take a lot to overturn the decision of the magistrate who signed this warrant. Now, obviously, the standard for probable cause for a warrant, you've all heard this before, Your Honors, is there fair probability? That's it. Fair probability that evidence of a crime will be signed. And again, focus on the words fair probability. And the United States Supreme Court has said, if it's doubtful, sign the warrant. We want law enforcement to bring search warrants to district court judges, to magistrates. If it's doubtful, sign the warrant. Now, historically in this type of case, criminal vehicular homicides, before the United States Supreme Court ruled in Missouri versus McNeely, we didn't do search warrants in these cases. We called it Schmerber's in prosecution land, Schmerber versus California. The dissipation of alcohol or drugs was enough to take a blood sample. There weren't search warrants. In McNeely, the United States Supreme Court said you need to do search warrants. That's exactly what law enforcement did in this case. And I think it's important to remember the realities of investigating these crimes.
This case seems more like the reality of drop-down boxes on computer-generated search warrants. Wasn't that allegedly the problem that resulted in the application saying under the influence of alcohol instead of under the influence of drugs?
I think that's true, Your Honor. We've statewide, many county attorneys' offices, Sherburn's no exception, created template warrants to try and get warrants in alcohol and drug cases to the district court as soon as possible because of the dissipation.
And I understand and appreciate that, but that goal doesn't alleviate the need for officers to include in the four corners of the warrant facts that are true and accurate and constitute a substantial basis for the warrant. I mean, here there's a reference to has been a known meth user in the past. We don't have any idea what that means. And then there's nothing that ties that to under the influence of alcohol.
Your Honor, is counsel cited State versus Fawcett, the Minnesota Supreme Court, that said once law enforcement obtains a blood sample through a search warrant, it can be tested for alcohol or drugs. Now, switching back to your point, I still believe absolutely there was enough information for a fair probability of a crime. And I think the focus isn't that drop-down box alcohol. Was there a fair probability of a crime documented in the four corners of the warrant? And I would point out that the last page of the search warrant, a couple paragraphs above the judge's signature, says the court further finds that due to the dissipation of alcohol slash drugs in the human body, this warrant may be served at any time during the day or night. But, Your Honor, so
but what, which crime? What's the crime? What is the information in the four corners of the warrant that supports a crime and what crime?
Your Honor, criminal vehicular homicide, possibly gross negligence, drugs in the system. I would concede we didn't document that they were investigating alcohol in the system. But if I could go through what the magistrate knew. Now, Highway 10 at this location is a very straight piece of road. At 7:55 a.m., it has very high traffic. It has good visibility. It was light out. There was no rain. The roads were dry. The magistrate knew that there was fatal injuries to Matthew Bartell, that the appellant had said he was distracted from an argument with his ex-girlfriend.
Are you reciting facts just from the search warrant application?
I am, ma'am. Okay. Yes, Your Honor.
Like the nature of the road, that it's straight and all of that, is all that?
Your Honor, that may not be end. I'll limit it.
On what's in the application. Okay.
Witnesses observed the appellant run the red light while heading westbound on 10. He exited his car in a daze, did not know what color the light was. He was a known meth user in the past, and it's unknown why he would run a red light at a very open intersection with good visibility. Your Honor, my point is I think that's enough to just establish there's a fair probability there's evidence of a crime. And again, if it's doubtful, the United States Supreme Court says sign it. So, and I also think it needs to be noted, again, with dissipation, law enforcement has a limited time period to get these search warrants to magistrates, whether because of dissipation of alcohol or drugs.
So what, taking this, your position, though, and thinking about how that applies broadly, aren't you really saying that any time someone runs a red light in daylight, they don't know what, and they say they don't know what color the light is, and they have either used drug or alcohol at some point in their past, that you're the right to, that there's probable cause. Aren't you saying that any of us who have ever used drugs or alcohol and run a red light and don't know the color of the light, that there's probable cause for a search? Isn't that your position?
I'm arguing the facts of this warrant.
And I'm trying to look at the facts of this warrant, but I'm also trying to think about what that means in the application of our law.
But I also think, Your Honor, the reality of the situation. Our case law says common sense. Consider the totality of the circumstances. If law enforcement doesn't get the search warrant to a magistrate within an expedited manner, this evidence is lost forever. We have a dead person at the scene. We have an individual who ran a red light, hit him at highway speeds. There's no other explanation for his behavior. He's in a daze. We have witnesses who establish what happened, and he's a known meth user. This evidence is lost forever. It is lost forever. And McNeely says, go and get a warrant. That's exactly what we did. In drug criminal vehicular homicide investigations, you're going to be at the initial stages of the investigation. Now, am I arguing you don't need to apply the law because of that? No. But when a magistrate looks at this with common sense and considers the totality, this evidence is lost forever.
Okay.
If I don't sign this warrant. So even if, you know, the distinguished members of this panel feel this was marginal, the United States Supreme Court says sign the warrant.
Well, let me take you to perhaps the second issue just while I have time, because I do want to add, because I must say I was troubled by the fact that the information, since they said, you know, quoted Sanders saying no, you know, on the known meth user, but they don't include the information that she says she didn't believe he'd used drugs recently. Now, I mean, I understand you'd have to put in the whole context of it, but why isn't leaving that out, why isn't that reckless material omission?
And the district court listened to the testimony at the omnibus hearing, and I just want to get really quickly to the reality of it. This is a very busy intersection. I call it all hands on deck. You have about every member of the state patrol out there. We have a dead body. They're interviewing witnesses. They're sending witnesses to interview the ex-girlfriend of this individual. They have one officer at the hospital. They're briefing this officer over the cell phone, is the reality of it. It's not an ideal situation, but it's trying to move this investigation forward to preserve evidence. And if I could just get in, the ex-girlfriend, what she actually said was, we used to use, and I know it's not in the search warrant, but it's relevant to the Franks issue. We used meth together on weekends. The last known use was October 31st of 2016, Halloween. So it's about 3.5 months from this incident. We're no longer together, so I don't know if he's used since then. And she was hesitant to answer whether he'd used in the last couple days. Right, that's what she said.
Right, and yeah. I understand if you could put, you don't just take one phrase, you need to put in all of it. But here they only put in the part that he was a known meth user in the past and didn't include that.
But, Your Honor, my argument is if all of that was in the warrant, what I just said, I still argue there's probable cause for this warrant. So it's not material under Clause 1. The district court found it was marginally relevant to the finding of probable cause. But to me, if you add those omissions, I still think there's probable cause. Again, I go back to common sense, totality of the circumstances, trying to preserve evidence that's going to be forever lost. You know, since McNeely, we're entering a new era in investigating these drug homicides. There isn't going to be... You're not going to have a blood test result like an alcohol. You could smell alcohol in the person. It's going to be a different scenario. I think the totality of the circumstances in common sense have to be considered if you're a district court judge, magistrate, reviewing these warrants. And again, if it's a close call, you sign the warrant. And then the other point I would get to is the district court saw the testimony of the witnesses. Even if this court, which is a de novo standard of review, finds that there was, it is material, the omissions of the ex-girlfriend's testimony, going to Clause 2, which is clearly erroneous standard, if the misstatement is material, it must be determined whether a government agent acted deliberately or recklessly misrepresented the fact. The district court found that did not occur in this situation. The district court saw the testimony of Trooper Stather. And obviously, I don't think there's anything to be established that there was clearly erroneous finding. I again want to cite appellate case laws as well, that court should not engage in a higher scrutiny when reviewing a decision of a magistrate to sign a warrant because it would deter compliance with the warrant requirement and then cause an increase in wireless searches. And again, I don't want to repeat my brief. I don't want to repeat myself, but it's the state's argument getting back to probable cause that, again, common sense, totality of the circumstances, the evidence is going to be lost. You can't look at each piece of evidence individually. If you look at all of it, there was enough for probable cause. And again, giving great deference to the decision of the district court, how could it be reversed if you give that decision great deference? And again, I agree with counsel that this case is important because now we're doing search warrants after McNeely. And again, these aren't always going to be easy situations. But again, We have established appellate case law. Clearly, the district court, who's a veteran judge, knows that. And he chose to sign it to preserve the evidence, and I absolutely believe it was the correct decision. Unless there's any questions, that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Yes, thank you.
Just a few comments. I was not arguing that this court should throw out the standard of great deference. What I was suggesting was there's a reason we give great deference because we assume that the district court judge is going to be looking at this, and based on the way that this this warrant is done, it seems very clear that it was not looked at carefully, and that even if great deference is given, you still don't have probable cause. Respondent keeps citing McNeely. Yep, McNeely requires a search warrant, but not just any search warrant. It still has to fit all of the, check all the boxes. So just because there's a search warrant doesn't mean, okay, we have one, we can do whatever we want. Judge Jessen, I thought you brought up a very important point, something that had been concerning to me as I was looking at this case too, and one of the arguments I had considered making, which was, does in the past for drug and alcohol use, any drug or alcohol use, any DWI, client, someone's got a DWI, he gets stopped for speeding. Well, he has a prior DWI, let's draw his blood. He was in treatment for DWI. She was a known drug user 10 years ago. Anything like that then will be allowed to be used to do a search of a defendant's blood. And I find that terrifying. State says that there's no other explanation other than drug use for this accident. The first thing that's just simply not true, because the first thing that appellant said was, I was distracted. Look at all the distracted driving we have these days. People are on their phones, they're texting. 2 miles from my house, a guy was texting on his phone, ran into a guy and killed him. it's a whole other issue. But there's a lot of distraction that goes on, and distraction alone does not necessarily mean drugs and alcohol, and it cannot mean that here. The state does not explain why, if all the information was provided, that would not undermine probable cause. Just simply says, well, it doesn't matter. But it does matter, because even if he had used it 4 months ago, Sanders said, I have no reason to believe that he has used it recently. And she had just been with him that morning. She had just been with him. She might have been hesitant to talk to the police, but that's okay. She can be hesitant to talk to the police. And they asked, drugs, alcohol? Nope, not that I know of. So appellant still argues that there was not probable cause in the four corners, however you look at it. But even if you were to find that, once you put in all the facts, they were material, they would have undermined a finding of probable cause. And that based on the officers and how the officers handled this case, it was at least reckless. I understand they're busy, but busy can't cut it here. It can't be, we're just so busy we didn't have time to do this right. That's how we get our Constitution gutted. We need to protect these constitutional rights. We need to protect our case law. It matters how these things are done. So appellant very respectfully requests that this court reverse the district court's ruling, vacate the search warrant, send the matter back. Thank you.
Thank you. The matter has been well argued. It is taken under advisement, and an opinion will be forthcoming. Thank you. We are now going to take a recess in our oral calendar while an ITV hearing is arranged.
Please rise.